It is, of course, Shabbat Sukkot. We can't miss that. I guess probably, like me, you're all beginning to wonder what day of the week it is by now. I have no idea what day of the week it is. I woke up this morning and I really just honestly had to think for a few seconds before I thought, no, it's Thursday, isn't it? But it all feels like it's just Shabbat, Shabbat, Shabbat at the minute. It certainly is quite a disturbing thing. Wonderful to have our readings from Bamidbar and Zechariah and from Revelation there as well. Just a reminder, if we needed it, I've talked briefly about the Jewish universal aspect of all of this. Just the fact that the heavenly Jerusalem, the final one that comes down, in a sense, which the physical copy in Jerusalem today, in the physical realm, as it were, the one in the past and the one to come, they echo the eternal city, which has always been there. They are the physical one being the shadow in that way. And it's lovely again just to hear the foundations of that eternal city. The foundations are built upon the testimony of the 12 Jewish emissaries that went out with the message of salvation. And they did. They went out with it. Went out to the nations with this message of salvation. Jewish emissaries. And the way to enter into this eternal city of Jerusalem has got to be through one of the 12 tribal doors. There's no door of the Gentiles in that heavenly Jerusalem. You're either with him and his people or you're not. But there's so many themes that we can pick up, really, from Sukkot. And one of them, of course, we've already mentioned. We could have a rousing chorus of happy birthday to you. Yom Huledet Sameach, we could do that on a superficial level. We've mentioned the sacrifices there, and if you read through that numbers passage there, you'll again counted them all up, the 70 sacrifices plus one, of course, which is looking forward to next week's celebration of Shemini Atzeret, not as the rabbis called it, Simchat Torah. That was a name they invented and came up with for it, but actually the roots of it predate all of that, and we'll be looking at a lot more of that obviously next week as we get round to our final festival in all of this. They are linked, and Sukkot certainly is linked backwards to Yom Kippur in terms of our rejoicing, but looking forward when it says, and everything shall be one. Mankind shall be one. There will be no more passports. Can you imagine? You're never going to go hunting around when you travel. It's gone. You won't need it anymore because all of humanity will be united under the lordship of Yeshua and the living God of Israel. It's going to be quite an amazing thing. And that's next week. We'll be looking forward to talking a bit more about that as well. All these things link together if we have eyes to see them. But we've talked about all of these things. And I know we're looking at this year in particular, tracking a different path through the festivals, really trying to pick up various different levels of meaning and connecting it specifically with Yeshua, Mashiach, and the meanings that he brings to this in a messianic Jewish way, rather than maybe just some of the traditional ideas and concepts around this. And of course, as I was digging through, I thought, well, that's good. I will continue with my line of research this year on that for the talk today. And of course, took the sermons out of the filing cabinet, all, well, 20 of them, I think, that are printed there, and there was another 10 before that which were not printed. You remember back in the day when sermons were handwritten? You know, we didn't have computers. No, you can't remember. I did that. I had a pad. Remember, right back in the 1990s, I literally had a pad, and I would hand write my sermons every single week. And I've still got them all upstairs there. They're in a big file now. They don't get opened very often, but they're all there. Sometimes you go back and look, it's a bit of nostalgia to go back and look where we started and what we came through. There's so much we can bring out from all of this. And the commandments, again, to remind ourselves of what it is that we're actually meant to be doing today, it helps us always to think, what is the biblical basis? Where are the additions? What's been tweaked and changed? What's, you know, bits have been added from mythology or understanding, or just because that's what has been added, and names changed and whatever, and things may be covered up with the mist of time. And it's good to remind ourselves in all of this that we are commanded to bring the goodly boughs of four different trees, which today are represented in the four species that we have here. But again, of course, we have to see that is a later traditional Talmudic interpretation and view of this. They certainly were not necessarily bringing exactly what we have here in the first century, although we do have, from archaeological research, the different boughs of trees and the etrogim engraved in different things. Coins, for instance, even around the Bar Kokhba revolt time, have the etrog in them. So we can fairly confidently say that that tradition was around, at least around early 2nd century, if not too much before, but the actual codification of it, of course, came much later. But we are commanded to take these four species. We are specifically commanded to lift them to the Lord, to take them, not necessarily to wave them, but to take them. We're specifically commanded to rejoice before the Lord with them as symbols of the plentiful nature and provision that is in the land of Israel for us as his people. This is just, in a sense, those four are a snapshot of the beauty and colour of what it means to live in the land and see that provision the Lord brings to us. So we are meant to rejoice at this time of year. And of course, the big one is we are commanded to dwell in booths during this time period. So many bits. I hinted at this earlier that come up in the Messianic writings and other places around this where you think, if only we had more. We see it, for instance, when Mashiach Yeshua is going into, entering into Jerusalem in Matthew chapter 21. There's a throwaway comment in there that people cut down the boughs of goodly trees and held them up as Yeshua entered Jerusalem and putting them on the ground, as it were, as a carpet for him to walk into. The king's arrival at Sukkot into the holy city. And you read that and you just think they knew it, they saw it, they got it. They got the connection with what Sukkot was all about. I just wish they'd penned a few more PS, read below for more details, you know. Wouldn't it be wonderful to have seen that? The context and the bits around it that we just simply don't know today. Gone. Lost in the mists of history. And yet we do know clearly that believers in Yeshua, Messianic Jews in that first century time period, were acting in that way with the four species because they clearly could see a connection with Mashiach arriving as king in Jerusalem. And they knew that it was linked to Sukkot in this way, if only we knew more. One of those key areas not fully developed or recorded for us, but we could certainly try and find out more. But if you were forced to say what is the key element of Sukkot, you inevitably would have to conclude it's dwelling in a booth. That has got to be it. In the temple, the sacrifices are going on. That's what the priests are doing. The rank and file aren't involved with that so much. That's not something that the nation is engaged in. But every single house, family, had one of them. A booth, a sukkah, in the garden. Garden, front garden, back garden, yard, whatever it is. You know, whatever was attached to your house in that day. And this dwelling in booths, of course, is the historical connection associated ultimately with what this day of celebration is all about. A whole festival set up by the Lord around the idea of wandering in the wilderness as sojourners, homeless people, or shall we maybe say more accurately at that point, people who had a home, but we weren't yet there. We knew it was there by promise. We knew that we were being taken somewhere because God had said that that's where we were heading. He didn't just bring us out of Egypt to take us out of Egypt. He brought us out to take us in. But there was a transition between those two points. We knew the goal was there, the target was there, but we knew we had not yet entered it and taken it fully as ours. It was, if you like, a dream. It was a hope. It was something that lay before us. It was there and we knew it was going to be absolutely real. The Lord was to be trusted in every word that he had said. We knew it was going to become a reality. It was our future, the future of our nation. And absolutely, we knew in our dreams and our hopes, we knew, did we not, it was going to be perfect. We all think this, don't we? Perfection is just around the corner. It'll be that. This is what it will be. It was going to be perfect. It was going to be a land where we as Jews would live under the rulership of the Lord, the God of Israel. We would be obedient and we would be righteous. And the nations would look at us and just think, if only we could be like them. And they would all come and respond. It would be wonderful. It would be perfection on earth. It would be glorious. Because that's what we hold in our heads. The future that is perfect. But for now, here we were, in the desert, in the wilderness. 40 years we wandered, and today, this festival celebrates that 40-year wandering. It's kind of weird, isn't it, when you think about it in that way? That should be really one of the key focuses or foci of this day. The wandering, the journey. And I said it wasn't that it was aimless, we knew where we were going. But this journey that was ours, we owned this journey. I mean, truly we did own this journey. We've said before, you could literally walk between Egypt and Israel in a fortnight at that time period, even with that number of people and getting them across a short distance. It would not have taken long. It took us 40 years. When I say we owned that journey, because that journey was either lengthened or shortened by our reactions, our choices, our decisions, our obedience or disobedience, that transition time got longer or shorter dependent on us. The fixed points were set by the Lord. Coming out of Egypt, tick, done. Arriving in the land, it was going to happen, tick, done, in the future, it was fixed, it was going to be a thing. The middle bit was set by us. And I think it's intriguing when you see it in that way. Today, this day of Sukkot, yes, we're in our booth. Yes, we're celebrating with the joy that comes post-Yom Kippur, with the redemption of being set free from Egypt. To celebrate that redemption from Egypt, as we say in the liturgy, that's part of what this day is. All of that is true, but if you lift the hood, and if you get into the nuts and bolts of what's going on about this time period, you're actually going to have to say, we are celebrating a transition period which was awkward, it was difficult, it was challenging, then we got hungry, we got thirsty, we doubted, we had faith, we had good days, we had bad days. We rebelled against Moshe, we rebelled against the Lord. We tried to replace him with other leaders. We did X, Y, and Z. We danced before a golden calf. All of this is part of our journey. The end was never in doubt. Of course we were going to get to Israel, the promised land. Of course we were going to arrive. But this time period that we celebrate today, we're actually celebrating the spiritual journeys and walks that we are all on. It's a day of celebrating something that God is doing with us, to us, and by our reactions, choices, and decisions, we either hinder that or we speed that process up. That's what we're celebrating today. And you know what else is truly astonishing about this? God is not in a hurry. He really isn't. It may sound really surprising. 40 years we wandered. It could have been 38, it could have been 32, it could have been 21. 40 years. Could have been 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 2 months. It took us 40 years. God is not in a hurry. And that scares me on one level. But on another level, it really encourages me. Because it means that ultimately what the Lord was doing during this time of transition was that he needed for us to be ready for what came next. If the Lord had taken shortcuts in the desert with us, we would not have been ready to enter the land. Its dereliction could have come even quicker than it did. I mean, let's be honest, we weren't in the land long before sin begins to multiply and chaos begins to break out. Who knows, it could have been even quicker still if the Lord had not taken that time with us in the wilderness. We needed to be ready. The people who came out of Egypt still had this slave mentality in their heads. They couldn't get rid of it. They were not the ones who were going to be the generation that entered in. They were incapable of changing that much, yielding that much. The Lord had to wait for another generation to arise who would not have that mentality of being a slave, who would listen more closely, who would have more faith. It takes time to get to the place where we are ready to serve God. Of course, we just wake up one morning, don't we? And we just think, yes, Lord, today, I'm ready today, Lord. Pick me, I'm good, I'm ready. And you're nowhere near ready. And the Lord will look at you and he'll go, well, thank you very much. Thanks, Paul, thanks, Timothy, and Sandra, thank you. Nice to hear you. I appreciate the fact you think you're ready to serve me now. But I tell you what, let's take 20 years and sort you out first before we think about putting you into ministry to serve me. Well, not 20 years, Lord. No, I can't do that. Yeah, I tell you what, let's tell you what, Sandra, I'm going to put you in this job, and sorry to say it, but the person you're going to be working next to in your office, she's going to be a right dragon. Sorry, she is. It's the way it is. Oh, I don't want to be sitting next to a right dragon. She's going to have a go at me. Yeah, okay, yeah, I know, but actually, Sandra, the worst bit is even worse. Your boss is going to be a monster. And, yeah, he's going to sack you in 6 years. He's going to put you on the trumped up charges and put you with disciplinary, and you're going to be sacked. Sorry. But I don't want that, Lord. But the job after that you're going to have, he's going to be quite nice. It'll be quite pleasant. Oh, and by the way, the one good thing that's going to come out of this is that the person on the other side of the place you're going to work, he's going to be your husband. You don't know that yet, but I know. And he's going to be really nice. And he's going to get you through the disciplinary. And after that, there's going to, you know, and you look at this in the round of it, and I wonder if the Lord explained this 20 years to Sandra at that point. I wonder if at the end of it she'd go, okay, let's do this. If that's what it is, maybe, I don't know. You know, because it's not all bad. There's lots of good as well. We learn from the good, the bad, and the ugly. All of it makes sense in the round, eventually, when the dust settles. But God is not in a hurry. It was that time when we were in that transition of learning those spiritual lessons, developing faith and trust in our God. Wherever he led us, we went. The pillar of cloud and fire, visibly being led by his Spirit. We learnt that if we trusted to follow him, we would have water that evening, because he would take us to places where we would drink. Day by day, we learnt the lessons of Shabbat, that he double portioned us on the day before Shabbat, that we wouldn't have to go and collect. These were lessons we learnt, but you don't learn them instantaneously. They are gained over the weeks, the months, and eventually the years. Internalized, learnt, and ultimately then transmitted to the next generation. And God is not in a hurry. He's not in a hurry with you. He's not in a hurry with me. He's not making shortcuts with us. You know where we're going to be headed. You know what's happening. You heard the book of Revelation there. We know what's going to be happening with Israel. We know there'll be another war with Israel. We know the nations are going to go up, whether Gog or Magog at the end, or whether another war in the meantime. We know all these things seem to be predicted in the scriptures. And we know that Israel survives. We know that the Jewish people, Israel, come back into Israel again, regathered from the north, south, east and west, as we were doing this morning. We know all of that is going to happen. We can see the future on one level. We may not know day by day with ourselves, but we can see where it is going. And if we trust in the Lord that is leading us with the pillar of cloud and fire every single day of our lives, even when the path in front of us looks rocky or complicated, or there are mounds in the way, or soft sand in the way, or whatever it may be that we grumble and complain about, and boy, did we grumble and complain. Whatever it may be as part of that journey, if we actually let go of our lives, relinquish the captain's hat, and hand over the steering wheel to our Lord, then he can get to work with us. The problem is we keep grabbing the steering wheel back and we, no, course correction, Lord, not that job. No, I don't want to be working there. And Lord goes, if you don't work there, Sandra, you're going to miss your husband. I know, but I prefer that job. Our life can be completely different. And maybe the Lord in his mercy would still make sure that Sandra's husband bumps into her one day on the bus or something. You know, that's the way the Lord does things. But there's a path that we walk. Now, we can make that more complicated if we refuse to let him be Lord. If we refuse, rebel, fight back, because we think we don't want it. We think we know how we're going to end up in that place. We're certain we know how God is going to perfect us. We're certain we know where we're meant to be and what we're meant to be doing and blah, blah, blah. We've got it all worked out and mapped out in our heads. We are the ones that are engaging our rational thinking, just as Harvard did in the garden, thinking, I know how we'll do this, let's do it this way. And a huge loop began in human history at that point that we are still working our way through with all the destruction of humanity that has happened since that single decision. These are transitional years of preparation. How strange, when you put it that way, to think today's Sukkot, we are celebrating transitional years of preparation. We should celebrate it because of what God is doing in our lives, what he's building in every single day. You're stronger in him now than you were a year ago because you've had another year's experience of walking with the Lord. I know it's been painful. I know there's been tears. I know it's been challenge and difficulty for many of us. And there's also been awesome days, good days, amazing days, fantastic answers to prayer, all of which have built things into our lives. I just want to really thank the Lord. I feel this welling up in me as I was writing this. I just want to thank the Lord that I can absolutely trust him with my life. That's a statement which is built upon experience. Now, probably wouldn't have been quick to say it 30 years ago. Today, I have a confidence and assurance in me of the ability of the Lord to rule and govern my life and a way that I can trust him to do so, a confidence in the Lord, which is so grounded and deep in him because of the transitional years of preparation and years of walking with him. It would not have happened if he had downloaded it in a USB port in the back of my head, Matrix style. I just simply would not have been in the same place. You need to go through these things. We picked the 40 years of wandering because of our lack of faith. That's what we brought upon ourselves. Whether that path is long or short, ultimately we connect with the Lord in this experience. What we learn, if we learn quickly, in a sense we shorten that path. Maybe those who are taken early from us are those who have learnt to cooperate with the Lord. And they've learnt everything they needed to learn. And maybe the Lord could take them home earlier, from our perspective, than we would like it to be. We long for the perfect to come. We know it's ahead. And yet, in our cycles of obedience and inevitable disobedience, we ache every year for that lack of perfection in our bodies. Yom Kippur tells us every year that the perfect has not yet come. And if we ever tell ourselves that it has, because we, at least in me and my family, we're perfect, not sure about the rest, you know, if we ever delude ourselves, then we really are foolish. And isn't it true that, this wandering, this experience of this transition, this always growing, changing, evolving, moving on spiritually, really has been the experience of Israel through the millennia. It's always been there. We shouldn't be surprised in terms of our own personal walks in this way as well. Think of Abraham leaving home, family and country, setting out on a journey of wanderings that never brought him to the final fullness of his hope. Didn't, did it? Did Abraham ever see what he hoped for? He didn't. He died. It was still yet a long future dream and goal of a nation that would be his descendants functioning in that land. He never, in his human life, got to see that hope fulfilled. But he kept wandering. He kept moving. He kept going on. He left everything he knew behind and set out on this journey to be the progenitor of the Jewish people. He truly is our Father in that way. What we learn, I think, from the wanderings which Abraham had, he didn't lose faith. He didn't lose hope. He knew the end result was good. He lived that life of promise, even while yet not seeing the actuality and reality of it. We are not yet perfected. We know that we will be. Just imagine one day I will be perfect. Imagine. Just imagine what that would be like. But we will all be perfect. You know? It'd be lovely. We'll be able to talk to each other. And we won't hurt each other. We won't be doing egoistic one-upmanship games and, you know, we won't be sneakily plotting stuff behind people's backs or slandering as soon as we walk out the room. We will be perfect. And all these things around us will stop. Of course, we connect with this as a nation, vast, and I mean vast chunks of our time as Israel have not been lived in our land at all, but in diaspora. You know, our core character and fabric of the nation was formed living outside the land. 400 years in Egypt, we were foreigners and non-natives in a country that first accepted us and then rejected us and made us slaves. We were 70 years in Babylon. 2,000 years, this most recent diaspora has been our home. More than the land, in many ways. We have lived for long time periods, wandering this planet. It seems that stability in living seems not to be our watchword at all. It's crazy, isn't it, when we think of it in this way. We have forever wandered this planet, forever been mobile, forever been chased from place to place, moved on here, moved on there, never quite yet being in the land long enough to grow it into what could become perfection, what could become truly a light to the nations. And we moved on again, stability gone. This is the festival we are keeping today, people. This is the core of what we're talking about with Sukkot. We are celebrating instability and transience and learning and not really being able to say, here are my roots, here I am, here I stay. It's like in this world, we are not really quite at home. Well, there's a thought that connects with today in that way. Yes, God is faithful. He will always bring us to the land, to the destination. We run the race, as Shaul would put it in that way. There is the finishing line. It is there. We are heading towards it. We are not people who are just stuck on a siding somewhere. And yet, our lives, Israel's lives historically, have always been in the balance, fearing extinction. And look at what we are facing right now. We have a prime example of all of this before our eyes. It's almost as if crisis is the middle name of Israel. Transition, movement. Always seems like we just think we're beginning to get comfortable and then boom. No, you're not. You've got more to learn, more to see, more to experience, more to trust, more faith to have. And it doesn't just come because we've got a sleepy bed that's lovely and comfortable and we can sleep as much as we want. You know what? We grow most under pressure. Sadly, it is true. It's not when we're rich and famous and we've got three Mercedes parked outside the door that we tend to grow a lot in the Lord. It's the other end of the spectrum is where we grow most in Him. And this transition time is designed for this. We lived in booths. We lived in huts that we would take down and rebuild in the evening if we'd moved on in the day. You can't get more transitional than that. We were camping for 40 years. If you like camping, I don't know whether, I mean, I have to say I don't understand you if you do, but if you do like camping, you know, I suspect even then, after 2 weeks of it, you're probably thinking, I can't wait to get home and have a proper bath and put the dishwasher on. And, you know, we don't like it really, living in transience like that. We don't like that journey, the feeling that we're always stuck in the middle somewhere and not really moving on. And the key to this, I think, is the reality of this as it really begins to push in for us, is understanding that Exodus, the Exodus that we think is actually celebrated once a year at Passover, is actually celebrated twice in the annual cycle of holidays. You may not have seen it this way before. The Exodus is celebrated at Pesach, obviously, and Sukkot. Because we're living in booths. We've come out of Egypt. This reminds us, it takes us back to that original point or beginning, Passover, coming out of Egypt. Sukkot is the next natural extension of all of this. If Pesach is the event of redemption, then Sukkot is the journey that begins afterwards. And the two are linked in a strong way. Now, people often think that redemption is instantaneous. It isn't. Well, it is. But it isn't, right? It is, of course it is. When you're forgiven, the Lord forgives you, and you meet Him, as it were, you acknowledge His Lordship in that way. In modern parlance, as it says in the Gospels, being born again, redeemed in that sense. Of course, that is an instantaneous event in that sense, but we delude ourselves if we think it ends at that point. That is literally getting an ankle over the line. The race is ahead of you. You've just begun. You may be saved by faith in that sense as Abraham was. That salvation and righteousness may be credited to your account as it was with Abraham. That is true. But the living out of that faith has only just begun. You've got a whole life ahead of you, walking with the Lord, when He will mould you and break you and train you and teach you and give you good things, and then there'll be other cycles of discipline because of your disobedience, and. And yet I suspect that for a lot of people who come to meet the Lord in that powerful way, and it's great if you have a powerful encounter with the Lord on that day of your redemption, we walk away possibly on that day thinking, that's it, I've arrived. I've everything I need. People will even tell you, you've got everything you need. You don't need anything more. You've now got Yeshua. Everything is yours. I'm thinking people are being deceived. That journey begins that day. You've not yet been fully perfected. So what happens is someone is freshly wet behind the ears from immersion. They come out for water and think, I'm born again. I know Yeshua. Hallelujah. And a week later, they're committing some horrendous sin. They're going, why am I this? This shouldn't be happening. I'm a new creature. Yeah, you're right. You are. But you've not been schooled yet. You've not been trained in the spiritual walk with the Lord. That takes time. Your whole life will be hallmarked with that idea. God's deliverance is historic and it is real. He brought us out of Egypt. It was an event. It was tangible. It was real. But the 40 years of walking in the wilderness only just begun. We didn't know that when we left Egypt. We thought that was it. We're released. We're redeemed. We're set free. We're delivered. And now we can just get on with our lives. It wasn't even close to that. We had a whole lot of walking to do. We've not yet arrived in fullness. We are in the in-between years. And it's interesting enough in traditional Judaism, these aspects are all connected with the Messianic hope, the Messianic age to come, and so on. You'll be familiar with those ideas and concepts which are talked about in other forms of Judaism outside of Messianic Judaism. But what that embodies is the idea that perfection is coming. It is coming. The fullness of it all is coming. But we're not quite there yet. We know this as Messianic Jews. We know that reality now even more for those as Messianic Jews. We know Yeshua Mashiach is with us. He indwells us. We know the reality of God in that way even more so. And yet, we still see imperfection has its hold. The earth is still corrupt and sin is perniciously ubiquitous. We see it everywhere. And it's the writer of Hebrews, and just one little bit to get you to chew on, I think, who really nails this idea. And it's that idea that we're in that transition period. We are, in a sense, beginning that journey. Perfection is coming. We're getting closer, but we've not yet arrived. And it comes, of course, as you'd expect, from the book of Hebrews, this open letter teaching to the Jewish people. And whoever it was who wrote it says this in 8:13. I ought to say government health warning on this verse, because it's one of those verses, right, which tends to trigger people thinking, oh yeah, see, I told you. I'll read it, you'll see what I mean. In that, he says, the Lord says, a renewed covenant, he has made the first covenant obsolete. Now what is becoming obsolete and growing old is ready to vanish away. I say that with great caution, because it's one of the trigger verses where people go, see, Mosaic covenant's gone, it's all been abolished, the renewed covenant is here, it's finished. You didn't hear, you weren't listening. Because actually the way the King James, bless King James, the way King James translates this, you can hear he's giving you two contradictory statements, right? Listen. He has made the first obsolete. Now what is becoming obsolete and growing old is ready to vanish away. Hang on, he's just said it's obsolete, and then he says, what is becoming obsolete? Well, is it obsolete or not obsolete? Make your mind up, King. Well, King James, you can't seem to decide what's going on here. It says, you have to go, of course, to stir. You can hear the reality in there if you've got the ears to hear it, but you kind of have to listen really, really closely. It says here, this is Stern's translation, which gives out a little bit more of the proper meaning of this. By using the term renewed or new, he has made the first covenant, inverted commas, old. And something being made old, something in the process of being aged, is on its way to vanishing altogether. He's not saying the Mosaic covenant has been done away with. Clearly, he's not saying that. But what he is saying is that the renewed covenant has now placed the original Mosaic covenant in a line of covenants, thereby aging it. It's now older than the one which has now been cut in Yeshua. That's a historic fact. But that isn't saying that the old is gone. It's not saying it's obsolete. It cannot be obsolete because it's embedded in the renewed covenant. We know that. It cannot have been renewed. Got rid of in that way. If the Mosaic covenant had been done away with, the renewed covenant would be gutted and there'd be nothing in it. So we know that cannot be an adequate translation. But what the writer is clearly saying is that yes, this now is an older covenant in comparison to this renewed covenant that we're now seeing, but he makes the interesting comment there that what is becoming obsolete and growing old is ready to vanish away. It's the process that I find intriguing. And this writer understands exactly what I've been saying this morning. This is not about removal of covenants. It's saying that we're in the in-between years, the transition time of wilderness. Yes, it's coming. Yes, the covenants that we've got, yes, they're helpful for right now in terms of living in this world in a righteous relationship with the Lord. But please, Lord, when perfection comes, we won't need any of this. It's true. Let me give you an example. If every single human being, well, let's restrict it, if everyone in the UK drove on the roads in a sensible way at a speed that was appropriate for the conditions, the number of pedestrians and other road users, we would not have to have speed limits. That's the equivalent. You wouldn't need them. The reason why we have speed limits is because there are some people who think it's great to do 80 miles an hour outside of school. On a road in a housing estate. And then zoom along at 70 miles an hour because they think we can do it. That's why we have speed limits. To curb human behaviour. The Torah, actually, it works in a very similar way. It curbs our behaviour to bring it into a righteous thing rather than an unrighteous behaviour as a human being. And that, in a sense, is when perfection arrives. When we are all perfect, we will not be subject to the highway code. We won't. We won't need to be. Because we'll all be driving appropriately. Because we're perfect. Right? We've arrived. And that's the idea about this, you know, it's older in a sense. The highway code is an older thing. We, in the end, when we're all perfected, when perfect has come, we're not going to need it. It's becoming obsolete the closer we get to the end. The closer we're walking with the Lord. And I would hope, as believers, and I know that we joke about this sometimes with the speed limits and things, but you know, I would hope as believers that actually we don't just drive 70 on the motorway or 30 outside a housing estate because it's the highway code. We do it because it's safe, because it's right, because it's what is required to act as a decent human being. That should be the journey that we're on, not thinking of what does it say. We should be learning that, transitioning to that, internalizing of what's the right thing to do in this particular situation. We should know it and then live it. Now Sukkot really, as the journey festival, I think embodies that sense of hope for the destination. That's what it is all about. We're on that journey. We've not yet arrived. It's coming. But we're not yet through the door. And we are still, in that sense, right now, if you put it into Passover terminology, living between the third and the fourth cup. Redemption has come, but the cup of fulfillment of all things is still yet to happen. We're still in that transition period. That's now. That's where we are. We are working towards that conclusion. It is coming. The fact that Messianic Judaism exists today is an indication we are considerably closer to that than we were 60 years ago, for instance. The fact that since 1948 Israel exists again is an indication we are significantly closer to that end point of history. We are getting there, but we are still not yet perfectly arrived. But we hope for it, we know it's coming, we know it is there. And that is why also this is a festival of joy and rejoicing. It's a joy and rejoicing connected with our redemption and our future arrival as perfect before the Lord. There's a joy in all of this, knowing that we're on that journey. No one's going to say it's easy. But if you allow the Lord to disciple you, if you allow him to reach into your life, as I've been saying all the way through this morning, let him be Lord. In a real way. Let him say the words. Mean it. Let it be real. And there'll be pain. Because you won't like the way he's doing things in your life. But there will also be days of real deep joy. Breakthroughs. Setting free. Moving forward. The hope drives us forward. The yearning for the better and the end of sin. It's hope that gets you out of bed in the morning. Joy comes with each step closer to home. These are our lives, wanderers. People, we are wanderers, but we're coming home. But never forget, the arrival is guaranteed. Perfection does await all for those who have faith. Amen.